So, all right. So we're studying Deborah. She's Peter said, the only female judge. She is one of, how many judges do you think there were?
12.
There you go. Way to go. 12. So, yes, there are 12. There were 12 judges. Like, there were 12 tribes, 12 disciples, 12, you know. So there were 12 judges, and she was the only female judge. She was called a prophetess and a judge. She was unique among the judges, and I think that she was the only judge who was actually a real judge. Most of the others were used in a way to exact God's judgment, but they weren't actual judges. They didn't sit in a position of decision-making and stuff like that. And Deborah was. Deborah was called to be a prophetess, which just means that she spoke the truth of God to the people, kind of like Moses did. If they wanted to know what God thought, they would go to Moses. If they wanted to know what God thought in her time, they came to Deborah. She had a place that she would be called the Palm of Deborah. And basically, it was just a big open area with these huge palm trees around her. It was not uncommon, and actually I believe I read that it's not uncommon even nowadays for business like this, when they're talking about God's word and stuff, to be conducted out in the open air and to have like that as her, basically her office. That was her thing, so that's what she did. She would go out to there. She was called the wife of Lapidoth, and they're not really sure what that means. There is nobody named Lapidoth that we know of, but it could be. Could be she was a widower. Could be she was married and her husband was a stay-at-home dad or something. I don't know. some people think that it actually is just a term to add to her name, which the whole name together means a woman of fiery spirit. So whichever it meant, That's what they called her. They gave her great honor in that they came to her. They knew she had a reputation for being smart. She had a reputation for wisdom, for knowing God's word, for being able to speak. They had from experience knew that she was speaking God's truth, profiting also, she probably was able to tell them things that they didn't know and understand, but it all made sense when she explained it. She was known for being filled with the Spirit of God. A lot of them will make some kind of a thing that she was a judge because none of the other men would stand up and she had to fill the position. I find that kind of lame. It's like God only uses women as a last resort when the men don't stand up. Yeah, so I think that's kind of a misnomer, because God, she wasn't the first prophetess to be used by God. Moses' wife was considered a prophetess. There were various other prophetesses in the Old Testament as well as the New Testament. And so I really don't think it was just because all the men were uber lame, and so she had to step in to fill their shoes. I think that this was definitely a calling of God, and this is where she was supposed to be at this time. In the setting that we're at, if you want to go to the next slide, she was, her palm tree or whatever was set up between Bethel and Ramah. Was the space where she was at. At that time, the king was King Jabin, and he actually was from the king of Hazor, which is way up north there. And his captain of his army was Sisera, and he was from Harosheth Hagoyim. No, not that one yet. So in this time that we're at, we learned about Ehud last week. The guy who killed Jabba the Hutt, sliced his guts open. That's what I always think of when I think of that king that he killed, because he was so fat. I always think of Jabba the Hutt. But anyway, so he had, after he died, Ehud lived, and there was 80 years of peace, which is the cycle of the judges. There's always the bad, God delivers them into some kind of captivity. They're miserable. They finally realize they need God, and they shouldn't have turned their back on him. He gives them a judge. The judge delivers them. And then as long as that judge is alive, everybody remembers and toes the line. And then the next generation comes along who didn't know him, and they go right back to where they were, and they go back to sin again. I think that's how you see that in history all the time. You can see it even in our country's history. Some great war will be fought. People sacrifice their lives for freedom or for whatever. The next generation, so that their children don't have to deal with the evils of that they fought, and then their children grow up and don't remember or don't know, and they kind of forget, and they take their freedom for granted, and then they end up losing it. And that's kind of a cycle we see throughout all histories, but especially in the judges. Human nature. It's how we are. We can probably see it in your own lives. When things are going good, it's easy to forget how much God is in your life and is doing for you. And then till trouble comes along, and then all of a sudden we're like clinging to God, you know, tooth and nail. It's like dragging around his ankles. Please, please deliver us, you know. But then peace comes again. We'll remember him and we'll stay close to him. And then as soon as everything kind of smooths out, then all of a sudden we don't find the time to get into the word as much. We don't find the time to pray as much. Like I said, it's human nature, which I think is what Judges points out to us. It's not just Israel, it's everybody. In Judges 5:8, it says, after he was, there was 80 years of peace, and then it says that, which is it's broken up. Judges 4 is the whole story about Deborah. Judges 5 is a song that they sang to celebrate the victory that they had over the enemy. But it's kind of interesting because there's details in the song that aren't in the story. So you kind of got to read both of them and kind of go back and forth the seat to fill in some of the missing blanks. And one of them is in Judges 5:8. It says that new gods were chosen, which is a good indicator that they decided they didn't need God. They were going to take some of the gods from around the surrounding area. So that's what they did. They were under King Jabin. So now you can go to the next slide. And King Jabin, they actually have now, that beginning, like they always like to say whenever the Bible mentions somebody, the archaeologists are always quick to say it's not true because we have no evidence that such a king ever existed in that time period. And they usually end up eating their words, and because eventually somebody will find stuff. And that is true of King Jabin. Archaeologists have now found at least 3 references to him as a king, including this bronze statue and a letter to him, which is what that stone cutout is. So he was a formidable enemy. He had 900 chariots, which is like super duper tanks in those days. If you had chariots, you had an army. It was considered one of the best military weapons you could have. And actually, it's actually mentioned in the Judges 1 that that's the reason why why they didn't finish clearing out them out of the land. They left a lot of people in the land, and he's one of them. And the reason that they weren't able to get him out of the land was because of his chariots. He started oppressing them, and he severely suppressed them for about 20 years. So that's how long it took for people to realize, hey, maybe we need to go back to God. Because it started getting really bad. In Deborah's song, it actually talks about how things were. And it talked about how they were afraid to even walk the main highways. Nobody took the main streets anymore because it was so dangerous. People, if you walked the main street out in the main street, you're probably going to get attacked and looted. So they would take, they were afraid to take it, so they would take all the bypasses and the narrow and offshoot ways to get around to where they were going to try to avoid trouble. also mentions that pleasantries ceased. So I think people stopped trusting each other. Nobody said hi because you didn't know who you were saying hi to. All their weapons had been taken away, which is always one of the first things that a conqueror will do, is take away your weapons. It said that there was not a shield or spear among 40,000 people, which is interesting because that means that they had no weapons, because the number of people that actually went up against Jabin was only 10,000. So probably they had to come up with other things to make, bows and arrows, things that they could make, but there was no weapons of steel unless they stole them from them when they were doing it. So they didn't have anything to defend themselves with. It was a very scary time for them. So next slide. The leader of the Israeli forces at that time was Barak. He was a military leader of Israel. He was not a coward. Some people like to say, oh, he wanted a woman with him, so he must have been a coward, you know, and I don't believe that either. I mean, he was the leader of the military armies of Israel. I don't think the guy was a wimp, you know. It's not like he was like Gideon, where he was, threshing wheat, and he'd never held a weapon in his hand before, so you can see where he might be intimidated. Barak was ready to go to battle. But I think that he knew that his people needed more than just his word to say that God was going to give them the victory. And I think he knew that by having her with them, that they would see that as a focal point and know that they knew her reputation, and they knew that if she said they were going to win, that gave them the faith and to press on and do what they needed to do. And he is actually still mentioned, and they have in Hebrews 11 is the Hall of Faith, and Barak is in there, along with Gideon and several other people that you wouldn't expect to be in there, but there they are, which gives us hope, because sometimes we don't always do the right thing either, and we fall and we have doubts and stuff, but God can still count us faithful in spite of that. So the next slide shows the setup. Deborah sent out word. She got a word from God that it was time, and she wanted to use Barak, so she called Barak to her, and he came. And he told her that she needed to go to Mount Tabor, which is right where that is, and that's what Mount Tabor looks like. So imagine 10,000 soldiers sitting on top of that hill waiting for orders to go and attack. So he agrees to go if she'll go with him. And she agrees to go, but she says that credit for the victory will go to a woman. And I don't think she was not a warrior. She did not think she was going to be a warrior. I don't think she was thinking that she was actually going to be the one who was going to kill Jabin or anything like that. I think that she was just passing on what God was telling her. And she may have thought maybe, you know, that because she's with them that they would give her credit for it or whatever, but that was just what God told her, so that's what she said. So he gathered 10,000 men to fight. They were supposed to go from Mount Tabor, and then we're going to talk about what God did with that river Kishon. You can see it going from the sea between Hagosheth Hagoyim and Mount Tabor is a river. That's the river Kishon. Okay. That's all you need to do that. Okay. Another person in our story were the Kenites. They were actually descendants of Moses' father-in-law. If you guys remember, when they went to Mount Sinai, his father-in-law came and visited them, and he went with them. He traveled with them, and he had his own little place in the land of Israel where he camped out with his people. The Heber was from that tribe. However, he was an outcast from that tribe. He chose not to, either he didn't believe in the God, or he didn't like the way they did things or something, but he had a break with them, and he actually lived in the far north, up north of Lake Galilee there, when the rest of the tribe actually lived farther south. So he separated himself. You can go to the next slide. He separated himself from the rest of his tribe. He was also From the text, we believe that he was actually an informant and a friend to Barak, and he actually told him, or a friend of Jabin, not Barak. He was a friend of Jabin, and that he actually told Jabin where Barak was, which was fine because that was part of God's plan anyway. But he was an informant and a friend, so they considered him to be part of the enemy. So then Deborah told Barak the time had come. Jabin and his troops were coming up because they had been told that Barak was there. So Barak and them were going to come down from Mount Tabor, and they were charging down. And then if we go to Judges, it just says that the God's army had victory, and it doesn't say much else. But if we look at the song, it talks about how the Kishon River flooded over. What do you think doesn't go well with chariots? Water. Specifically mud, right? It's pretty hard. A chariot kind of loses all value if it's stuck in the mud. So that's what happened. The rivers of the Kishon overflowed and made mud everywhere, and all the chariots got stuck. So then they were stuck with hand-to-hand combat, and the Barak's armies were able to come down, and they took out the whole army of Jabin that was there. Sisera escaped. He jumped out of the chariot and took off, but Barak saw him and pursued him, and they went all the way up north to where his hometown was and passed there, killing all the soldiers as they went. Once I always get the names mixed up. It's like I don't remember who I'm talking about. So they get up there. Sisera flees, and thinking that Heber is a friend, he comes upon the tents where Heber is. Thinking that he's a friend, he comes into Heber, and Heber's wife is Jael was there. Heber wasn't, but Jael was. Apparently, Jael didn't agree with her father's politics, probably because she might have missed her family. She might thought that her husband was not being wise or whatever, but apparently she didn't agree, but he didn't know that. So when he came up to her, he thought she was a friend, and she treated him like a friend. He was exhausted. He was thirsty. He had been running for miles and miles. He hadn't had anything to drink, to eat. So he came in there, and he asked her to let him in, to hide him. He asked for water. She offers him milk and curds. So he finally has something to eat and to drink. He puts him in a comfortable place and covers him up. So he's all nice and warm. He's now been fed. He has water. And so what do you think happened? Falls asleep. Thinking he's all nice and safe. He leaves her with instruction to keep watch and not to let anybody know that he's there. Which point, once he's fallen asleep, she gets a tent peg and a hammer, and you can go to the next one, and drills it right through his head. So it was like, okay then. So that must have been some spike. I mean, they always show these spikes, but I'm like, okay, that spike isn't long enough to go all the way through his head. So it must have been... It's probably the tent pegs they use to keep the tents actually up. It's a tent peg. So it was probably about that long. And she just like right through his head. Like that must have been lovely. So shortly after she did that, Barak came because he was still chasing Sisera. And she knew who he was. So she told him, I know who you're looking for. And she took him to the tent and showed him to her. And then... The prophecy was fulfilled that Sisera would be delivered by a woman because Jael killed him. So they continued. That wasn't the end of the war. Of course, there are still more armies to fight, Jabin and stuff, and they finally won. They finally won the battle in the end. They wrote the song in celebration and to remember what had happened and the details and such. And then it says that Israel had rest for 40 years. And then... we get to do it all over again.